This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher.
Well, hi, everyone. Hopefully all is going okay for you these days. You know, for any of you who are regulars on the show, you may have noticed our never-ending quest to find some answers to our never-ending desire to find answers to health and fitness for ourselves. So I found a great book. It's called Fitness After 40, A New Beginning. Now, I know I passed 40 up many, many years ago, but I figured our author here, John Plotaro, could help us older folk anyway. We'll find out more about his expertise and knowledge in a moment, but let's get started. John, thanks so much for joining us, first of all, today. And looks as though you're certainly an example of your hard work and your knowledge about fitness. And, people over 50 have their own unique issues that they need to deal with in terms of being fit, but also finding that the body sometimes doesn't perform the way they want it or the way they remember it. but again, thanks for joining us. And, how does one work with all those constraints and facing reality of getting older?
Little by little, like anything else. Health and fitness is no different than learning a language or trying to build a portfolio or plan for your financial future or cultivate a relationship with your children or your spouse or your workers, little by little. And unfortunately, it seems that our media the media seem to promote some kind of shortcut, or it can happen in 10 minutes, or you just park a, that somehow it can happen very quickly. And as you get older, nothing really happens that quickly other than you're getting older.
That's so true. That is so true. And your advice, little by little, we don't hear that often enough, because we forget, whether it's a diet or physical fitness, we want it to happen faster, and it just doesn't seem to, does it?
No. And there's plenty of science. In other words, people, we've been studying this for a while now. So there's a lot of evidence that regular, physical activity will reduce the risk of a lot of chronic conditions and diseases like cardiovascular disease and stroke, even Alzheimer's, osteoporosis, obesity, cancer, anxiety, depression, all these things that happen as you get older. There's a whole body of evidence that shows that exercise or a healthier lifestyle not only helps you live longer, but it helps you live healthier. So that's not the problem. We have we all seem to know. If you ask anyone, you think it's good to exercise, pretty much everyone will say, "Well, yeah." Do you think it's good to eat, good foods, whole foods? Yeah. So people seem to know, but for some reason, they don't. And as you get older, there's this cycle of, especially I notice, for example, your body doesn't change that much from 20 to 40, 45. Doesn't seem to change. I've done seminars where there's like 50 people in a room, and I'll ask them, okay, from 0 to 10, your body changed a lot, right? And from 10 to 20, your body changed a lot. But from 20 years of age to like 40, did it change? And like no hands really go up. And then what about 50? Does it start changing? A bunch of hands go up. And then you go, well, what about at 60? Tons of hands goes up. So it seems like the beginning, the first 20 years of your life and maybe the last 20 of your life is where the most changes occur. So at 50, you got to really start thinking about, you're getting into kind of fourth quarter, right, of the football game.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first quarter, you could throw bombs and do kind of crazy plays, and hey, if you don't, it doesn't go well, you got three more quarters. But once you get in the fourth quarter, every play you make becomes a little bit more serious, more important. So somehow, however, people need to get it in their mind, in their mindset, that you need to start now. And I think a lot of people get into this, they're kind of, either life is challenging, they have time constraints, or they have pain, or they're overweight, and that lowers their ability to, or their stamina or their energy to exercise. So I find when I'm a competitive cyclist, and so when I've been injured and I can't walk or I can't move or I can't do certain things, that I start to become more, not despondent, but just more sedentary, like I don't want to move myself. And so I find myself looking for comfort foods because, you know, you're not happy because you're not moving, so you start eating a little bit more. And then that starts this cycle of, okay, you feel full. You know, what does a lion look like, you know, after it ate? You know, it's sleeping. So when you eat a lot, you kind of want to sleep, and so now you can't, you don't, it's hard to get going. And then when you get going, if you have pain, it makes you want to stop, which makes you feel more sedentary or more just lazier in a sense. And so you get this circle of, and so you put on more weight, you get lazier, you don't have the energy, you get more pain because you're not using your muscles to support your joints anymore. And the circle keeps going around and around until, you know, now you're starting to get, oh, you have diabetes. What? Oh, I have diabetes? I've never had diabetes. Well, yeah, well, now you do. Okay, so now you got to take medicines, and then drugs have, you know, effects or can affect you. And this cycle propagates, and it gets worse and worse, and that's where you just start spiraling. So at some point you need to make a decision or realize that you have a habit. And you have to change your habits. And I'm going to recommend a really good book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. And it's spelled D-U-H-I-G-G. And it's a really, really interesting book. And what it brings about is we all, our lives are made of habits. You know, I'm sure when you got ready this morning, you kind of have a routine, you know. We all have a routine. And that's, it's right, a habit.
So what I hear you saying, if you have a bad habit, like eating too much or eating the wrong food, you have to find a way to change it.
Exactly. So in order to change a habit, the way habits are is there's some kind of cue, and that cue triggers a routine, which usually ends up in some kind of reward. So what you have to do is maybe keep the same cue and the same reward, but the routine in the middle has to change. So they find there's certain habits this man talks about that are more important than others, and he calls them keystone habits. And keystone habits have the ability to affect, you know, the rest of the parts of your life, like they find that making one's bed in the morning helps with organizational skills. So certain keystone habits can affect how you live, how you spend your time, how you eat, how you play. So they find that exercise is one of those keystone habits. So there has to be, each person has to find some kind of cue that reminds them to exercise, something that reminds them, whether it's putting their tennis shoes by the door or packing up their gym clothes the night before and putting the bag by the door. And so that's their cue, some kind of cue that reminds you that, okay, I got to do this. And then once you do it, what's the reward? Well, you know, I'm going to get myself a smoothie, or I'm going to allow myself, I'm going to buy a piece of clothing or some kind of reward. I mean, you can't do that every day, but some kind of, maybe you get to eat, cheat a little bit on your diet a little bit if you're real strict. But there has to be some mechanism where you have to create a new habit, and they find that these keystone habits, once you start exercising, there's tons of science that demonstrates that you become more energetic, you're clear, you think properly, you have more stamina, you're in a better mood, yada, yada, yada. It keeps going on and on and on. So the way I do it is I think of your brain or your discipline as just like another muscle. So in order to become more disciplined, you have to start with a lighter weight. You can't start with a heavier weight. So what I do is I challenge myself to certain activities in my day. For example, turning the light out when I leave a room. So I try and strengthen my resolve or my discipline that every time I leave a room, not sometimes, every time I leave a room, I turn the light off. Every single time. And by doing that, it strengthens my resolve. Or, for example, I'm sure maybe you're the same way, is I'm going to put my keys in the same place every time. Not sometimes. Not 99% of the time. 100% of the time. So it strengthens my mental resolve to discipline myself. That every time I'm going to do these activities that you do a lot of times in the day, you strengthen your resolve. Or like if you had children, you teach them every time they go to the bathroom, they wash their hands. Not sometimes, not 99%. Every time you wash your hands. So certain things like that start strengthening your discipline. And so and the way I do it is I do it first. For example, when I work out, I particularly don't like to work my core, my abdominals. It's just kind of boring. It's hard to do. So I always, always do it first. Not sometimes, not 99% of the time. Every single time I do it. So by taking little steps to strengthen your discipline, I think you can make your mind stronger.
So what if someone who says, I just can't muster that kind of discipline, what do you say to them?
Well, anyone who says can't, I tell them to lose that word. Because there really is no such thing as can't. It's you won't. I mean, there's really no such thing as that. I don't believe in can't. Now, some things that you're trying to do, like if I said I want to become president of the United States, you might say to me, "Well, John, you can't do that." Now, I could believe I can. It's going to be a stretch, but that doesn't mean I can't. It's very there is a slight possibility that I could. You just never know. And again, they need to figure out what cue or what will make them change. For example, there's a thing called the National Weight Control Registry, okay? And it's a registry that keeps track of people that have lost a lot of weight, more than 30 pounds, and have kept it off. And they wanted to see, well, okay, what are some of the habits that these people all have in common, right? And one of the things they found is that 78% of them all ate breakfast. They all ate breakfast. So what I would say, so I can't do it. Say, well, do you make your bed every morning? Yes. Okay. All right. Do you eat breakfast every morning? No. Okay. Well, can you start with that? Maybe the reason why they don't have energy is because they don't eat breakfast every morning. How much water do you drink during the day? Oh, maybe they don't drink enough water. Okay, well, can you drink water? Yeah, I can drink water. Okay, start with that. Another thing they found, this National Weight Control Registry, is that people that keep the weight off write what they eat down. They keep a log. So I would ask them, can you write? Do you know how to write? Yeah, I know how to write. All right, so could you just keep a notepad? And when you eat something, write down what you ate, how much you ate, and what time you ate it. Can you start there? Ah, yeah. So anybody that says can't, there's probably something that they could do.
Yeah, John, I think I've heard that before. There's no such word as can't. So let's get down to a situation where, we need to be more disciplined. So step us through as to how we might start.
What I would do is, like any day, I use Outlook for my calendar. So what I would do is I would just put an alarm on my phone for tomorrow, look at my calendar, go, where's my break? And when that alarm goes off, that means I'm going to walk. So before I eat my lunch, before I do anything, I have to walk, and I'm going to walk 10 minutes at a brisk pace, right? So, because if you think about it, everybody's so busy now, you know, we never stop. We have cell phones, computers, fax machines, media everywhere, so we never stop. So when I went into, I became a manager years ago at a company, and a buddy of mine told me, he said, John, once you get into management, you've got to carve out an hour and a half a day that is yours, because if you don't, you'll lose it. You'll never be able to stop working because you have all, I had all these locations, so if something was going good in one location, something would be going bad. So he goes, you'll never stop, and your health will go. So I always remember that. So there has to be some time in your day to deal with your health, because I don't care how busy you are, if right now you got the flu, you're not going to be able to do anything tomorrow. You're just going to be laying there going, I feel terrible. So the most important thing that we have, and anyone will tell you that, I mean, I don't know how good, you know, the hundreds of millions and billions of dollars is doing Steve Jobs right now. He's dead. So it doesn't matter how much money you have if you're healthy, or what you need to do, or where you need to take your kids. If you're not healthy, you can't do it. So that's what I would do, is I would schedule your alarm for tomorrow, that as soon as it rings, like I look at my working my abs, I do it first because I don't like it. Then before you eat lunch, before you go run your errands, you have to walk for 10 minutes. And what will happen is that 10 minutes will eventually incorporate some push-ups, or it might incorporate a pull-up, or it might incorporate, or it might turn into 15 minutes, or it might turn into 10 minutes, and you pick up a set of weights, and you do three sets, or you stretch a little bit. Sooner or later, exercise is magic. So sooner or later, as you do it, you start feeling better. So that alarm becomes the cue, the walk becomes the routine, and the reward becomes how you feel. So there's nothing that's going to happen without some initiative. So if someone says to you, I can't do it, I won't do it, there's nothing, you know, unless they're your slave, or they're an inmate where you can make them do things. There's just nothing you can make them do. Some people, my father used to say, every help, but some people just don't want it. So, for example, a buddy of mine's father was admitted in the hospital after the doctor looked at him and said, look, you have psoriasis. Not psoriasis. Is it psoriasis for too much alcohol?
Yes.
Yeah. So he said, you have psoriasis. So if you go home, you got to stop drinking wine or you'll die in 12 months. So he went home and he kept drinking wine and he died in 12 months. So he had the option to just stop drinking alcohol. So it was a choice. Behind curtain number one is wine. Behind curtain number two is life. He chose one. So I don't know how else. If somebody can't be motivated by that, by saying you're going to die unless you stop, and to me that didn't sound like an important thing. It was like, look, you can never talk to your family again, or you're going to die. Oh, maybe I could see. Okay, well, I can't do that. I have to talk to my family. But just to drink wine, I just drink Grape Kool-Aid or something. I'd rather live.
Well, John, as we wind down here, let me just ask you if you can, for someone who's taking a listen and needs to get to some point or achieve some level or get healthy, where do they begin and how do they proceed?
First thing is, don't try and do it by yourself. Don't. Find other people that are like-minded. So a lot of people would say to me, because I train people for a living, they go, I just didn't want to come in the gym because I thought, you know, everybody was fit and running around in sports bras and, you know, with their shirts off and flexing in the mirror. No, that's not the way it works. It's not like that in a gym. So, or people will say, I would bicycle, but I don't have anyone to bicycle with. Well, the reality is, if you go out every day on your bicycle at the same time on the same bike path, you're going to run into people that are like-minded, riding the same way or riding the other way, and you're going to wave to them. And after you see them 3-4 times, next thing you know, you will meet them and you'll start talking. You'll find that you have cycling in common, or you're going to the gym, you have in common, and you'll find people that are like you, and they will support you because they're just like you. So you need to find that. Now, I own a company called the National Council for Certified Personal Trainers, and the website is nccpt.com. On that site, we have a locator system. So you can click on that site, and then you can find a trainer via area code, city, zip code, state, or whatever. And you could hire that trainer to help you, motivate you, and plan a program. Just like anything else, if you wanted to invest money, you would go talk to a financial advisor, maybe two or three of them. Same thing if you're buying a roof on your house. You go look, you ask a roofer, and you interview one or two roofers. But just in general, if you go walk around the park by your house after work, even you, Andy, at 10:30 at night, you go walk around the park at 10, you might find another guy that's walking around the park too. He's got the same problem. He's working all day. So you'll find like-minded. So don't try and do it on your own. Find some people to do it with. Find a little yoga center and just go take a class. The teacher will be nice to you. You'll find other people that take the class. But I think if you get with a group or a culture that also is trying to improve their life and live this healthy lifestyle, it'll help you adhere to that lifestyle. And then once you create your habit and you start seeing the benefits, we just did this in my office. I pay $50 a month to any employee that works out twice a week. And once they start, I can tell they feel better. Their production goes up. They like it. Plus, they like the $50. So find a group or at least another person that will do it with you.
That's great advice. Well, John, thanks so much. I appreciate your time, and you certainly left us with a good parting message.
Okay, and I want to give you one last plug, because I have a book that's called Yes, You Can, Fitness After 40, A New Beginning. And I call it that because after you're 40 some or 50, especially, kids are out of the house. Sometimes, you're retiring at 62. It's a really a new beginning. And yes, you can. You can be fit. I've seen 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old guys that are fit and that can still, be active and travel and experience new things. It really is not the end of the world being 50. It is a new beginning.
That is John Platero. His company, the National Council for Certified Personal Trainers. He's a world-class cyclist and strongly believes it's never too late to get fit. Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section.